We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Arteta! What a strike! What a screamer!
And a fantastic goal! Arsenal back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
Wakanda forever! This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, and you can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's it. That's the intro. Wakanda forever, baby. I'm wearing my Black Panther mask. I'm wearing my Spider-Man underpants. It's all good. We're going to have a good podcast. I'm so excited to talk about the Arsenal surpassing the Divers, the Wingers that are known as Ren Football Club. Yeah, we're through. We're into the hat, and we're facing Napoli. We will talk about the Napoli draw in a little bit. Late in the podcast, you're going to get the Predictatron, the much-ballyhooed Predictatron. We're going to give you our predictions for the run-in. But before we do that, we are going to cover what was a very eventful game. And before we do that, I'm going to do something I'm not very good at, but I'm going to do it because I think it is important. So on behalf of everyone on the podcast, want to send our thoughts and our sympathies out to the families, the friends, the colleagues of the victims, the people affected by what happened in Christchurch, New Zealand. And just to say that if you are someone who is suffering from, has suffered from violence or terror, whatever it may be around the world, that our thoughts are with you. Really hard to read and follow and understand what's going on around the world sometimes. And this was a particularly brutal event. So certainly our sympathies are with everybody affected by that. And that's not my best thing to do, but I hope that it reaches the people who need it. So we love you and we're with you. Anyway, let's get back to the game. Tim is here. You can find him on Twitter at Stilberto. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
Clive is here. You can find him on Twitter at ClivePAFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
Okay, this was a good one. This was a really good one. And the manager opts to go back three, which, you know, I think there's been a lot of whining in the past about the back three being defensive, but I think we've all grown up a little bit to understand how the back three can operate as a more attacking setup. And thanks to the bung that Raul paid to UEFA, we were able to field Lacazette and Aubameyang together. I mean, Tim, as far as I was concerned, I kind of thought this was the lineup he might go with. I think it is interesting, though, that as we get to the crunch part of the season, as we get to the times when it really matters most, he's going with Ozil. He's going with Ramsey. There's no Torreira. There's no Guendouzi. There's Shaq. It's the players who have been there before, plus Maitland-Niles. I mean, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, it's started to go back to being Ramsey and Ozil's team again to some extent?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how long that survives, if at all. But yeah, I mean, it's really, really difficult to read Emery and what he's going to do. I suspected that was going to be the team he would pick as well. But he's kind of always got a surprise, so you can't ever fully say, oh, I wasn't surprised at all. It's kind of like a bit of a double bluff. But I think. What's kind of important here is we have gone to the back three. We've kind of done what we did almost exactly 2 years ago, which is we've gone to the back three, but the back three, I think what Emery's worked out is that it works so much better when you don't then have a double pivot in front of it. So like when we went to Huddersfield and it was, you know, a back three with Torreira and Guendouzi in front of it, that's unnecessarily conservative for most games. Whereas I think what Emery's kind of worked out here is that with this kind of 3-5-2, having that extra defensive platform can therefore help him to accommodate Ramsey into that midfield role that he hasn't really trusted him with up until this point this season. So it's like, it's almost like a bit of a caveated formation. It's a bit, yeah, okay, I'll play Ramsey as a number eight, but I'll make sure there's a back three behind him. I'll still make sure there's Xhaka there. And I also think it's a decent way of accommodating Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac, both of whom I think you'd have some doubts about in a back four, but both of whom, you know, are strong and powerful going forward. We saw that with Maitland-Niles. Obviously, we've been seeing it for a long time with Kolasinac now. So, I think the idea of kind of having the wing backs combine with someone like Ozil, who's good at kind of drifting over towards them and helping them, and then kind of it also enables. I only really like Lacazette and Aubameyang together when they've got Ramsey behind them. Because then they can play that split striker role where they kind of both drift quite wide, and it just enables Ramsey to kind of power through the middle a bit, or Ozil. Ozil can do that in a slightly different way. So I think you're just starting to get some connections there in the team, rather than having like the midfield, the defence and the attack as three separate islands that do three separate things. And you know, you look at that defeat away at West Ham was one of our worst performances of the season, and that was with a 3-5-2, but that had everything pretty much the opposite of what I just said. You know, it was lots of disparate, disconnected parts almost working randomly from each other. So I've liked this 3-5-2 the last couple of games. My only slight concern, I did think that we conceded a lot on the flanks to Rennes after we went 2-0 up, and I was worried about that. And I thought he was going to do the Iwobi-Mkhitaryan swap a lot earlier than he did. I thought we'd lost control of the game a long time before he made that change, and that's slightly unusual for Emery, for him to wait until the 70th yeah. minute to do that. But that kind of suggests that he had quite a lot of faith in it. But you're right, he could also just be doing what you kind of said a couple of pods ago and just leaning on the more experienced players who've been there. And perhaps, you know, someone like Ozil is quite fresh, and Ramsey. They haven't played every single game. They haven't played 90 minutes every week like they would have previously. So, you know, perhaps I'm not saying that's the reason he left them out earlier in the season, but perhaps there's a little bit of an advantage to be realized there as well.
Yeah, and look, it's easy to say, well, he's not relying on experience, he's relying on attackers because we needed goals in this game. But I could point to the fact that he's used these players now in games like Spurs away and United at home, which he didn't do in the past. You know, and so, you know, he is coming back to a point where he maybe feels those are the players. Yeah, go ahead.
And yeah, my only... The only thing I did possibly think before the game, I heard you guys discuss, on the previous Rennes pod, I did wonder if he would, you know, just absolutely go for it in the first 20 minutes, which is what we did. And it worked because we scored twice. The drawback of that approach is if you don't score the goals, because what happened is once we went 2-0 up, we were knackered. Basically, but it's a kind of high risk, high reward strategy.
Keep going.
I wondered if he'd try and George Graham it a bit and think, actually, if it's 0-0 at half time, that's not terrible. Obviously, we'll try to score, but, you know, as long as, even if it's 0-0 on 65 minutes, we can still be in control. I wondered if he'd hold something back, basically, but he didn't, and it worked, so hallelujah.
But you know what, Tim? And this is what I think is interesting. I think this game and the first leg are actually identical games in some ways, in that we came out and dominated them and scored early in the first leg, went down a man, and that change disrupted us terribly. I thought in this game we came out roaring, put two goals past them, looked like we could put 10 past them. And then once we got to 2-0 and were in the driver's seat for the tie and going through, I thought we looked like we weren't sure how to approach it, and we became much more uncomfortable. We sat a little bit deeper. We were a little slower to play the ball out. Our passing got a little more erratic. And I just think, much like the first leg, this was a game where once we got the two goals so early, I think we surprised ourselves. And then I thought we went through a period where we weren't sure. Are we still all out attacking? Are we going to sit in a little more now that we're through? And knowing that if they got a goal, you know, we'd be out again. I don't think we handled that pressure well until we made the substitutions, which had a phenomenal impact. We'll get to that in a minute. Clive, let's talk about the first goal, because your favorite player has his fingerprints all over it, and that's Aaron Ramsey. I love the way he's playing right now, and I love that goal, because to me that sums Aaron Ramsey up. To be able to receive the ball on halfway, play the line-breaking pass that springs the counter, and then motor his way so far up the pitch so quickly that he's at the end line to play the ball for the assist to Aubameyang. That's just Aaron Ramsey all over. So we can talk about that goal and the way we were playing more generally, but I'd love for you to just sort of maybe get a little granular on Ramsey's role in that goal.
Yeah, well, you just did it, didn't you, really?
All right, so moving on. Fair enough.
Well, yeah, so well, I think we should talk a little bit more about the formation and what's happened to that. And
let's
what's
do that.
Changed. Yeah, because the back three formation, a few weeks ago, everyone was saying it should be binned, and it's always about how you play it, right? And when I looked at what we did yesterday, this is nothing different, really, to what we did for the Chelsea Cup final. It's a very similar system, and we tend to load up going forward, and we leave Xhaka isolated at the base, and he's got a little armchair behind him. It's the best use for our wing-backs, and it's the best use for Aaron Ramsey, because he can make that deeper run. Sometimes when he's higher, his jobs are reduced, and he just has to disrupt and press. When he's in that centre two in a 4-2-3-1, if he does that, he leaves us exposed. If he does that in a 3-5-2, no one moans. So, it's, as I've always said, it's stylistic with him, how he applies himself to the system that we're playing on that day. This formation always suits him. In fact, if I'm honest a little bit, and I wonder if Tim agrees with me from watching it, I actually feel Ramsey does so much work, he runs all over Ozil. He runs all over his space. And I think his role looks slightly reduced. And you look at the two of them, you think, do they actually coexist really, really well? And I'm thinking about how you can improve this formation. And I'm starting to think that if you put Mkhitaryan into the Ozil role and you get a bit of swapping between Ramsey and Mkhitaryan, what you gain is a far more dynamic ball carrier and a far better two-way player. I'm not saying that Ozil played bad, because everyone played well on the night, but as the game wore on, you could see we were lacking control. You can see that once we had lost our passing lanes, that we didn't have another way to present to fix a problem. And I was, you know, 70 minutes was 15 minutes too late. Tim, I agree with you 100%. We were losing control. They weren't quite good enough to punish us. But I'm thinking ball carriers, ball carriers, ball carriers. I actually thought he might do Torreira and a Mkhitaryan, but he went Iwobi Mkhitaryan, and the moment they arrived, it was like a switch flicked. It was like night and day, and suddenly, when it arrived at their feet, they weren't looking to pass away out of trouble. They just ran with it and drove with it and drove and attracted people to them, and then they're passing to open men into wide areas. So it was literally a night and day switch, and I don't understand why Emery took so long, actually, because it was begging for it. Maybe he just didn't respect them enough. Maybe they felt more in control. But a fan sitting on his seat, I'm thinking, bloody hell, I don't want him to score. We'd have to score another one. Do you see what I mean? So, So yeah, I felt that potentially could be an improvement. And now we've got this armchair for Ramsey and Ozil. It's like, which one of them two is going to be the most effective using it? They've got two forwards to hit. They've got Xhaka behind them buzzing the ball into their feet. They've got the comfort of three centre-backs who are really not moving. They don't want to move. They're the base of the team. And then you've got your two wing-backs just getting on the tip on the outside saying, I'm here for you as an out-ball, either through the line or as a almost like a Lauren-type wing-back, somebody that sits under laps, only goes on a couple of occasions on the outside, but really there's a supplementary midfielder, which Maitland-Niles actually is. He's a wide midfielder probably at this stage of his career. So when we play the 3-5-2, but really it's 3-4-3, when we play that system, I think it really suits his skill set. And I think once those substitutes came on, it was interesting to change. You'd have thought, you know, I would have thought maybe he would have brought them in, kept the midfield tight, and then hit the one forward on the break.
Yeah.
But he actually played the two of them wide. He put Mkhitaryan on one side, he Iwobi the other side, and literally went 3-4-3. And then Ramsey was sneaking up behind Aubameyang as well. Right, so you're literally saying to them, you think you're going to overload us, but we're coming for you. And that's what we did, and we got the third goal. And all that pressure we saw in the first game, where they were doubling up on our, you know, they gave Monreal a torrid, right? They're doubling up on our wide areas. We didn't see any of that hardly in this game. And that's because of the bravery of our players, the bravery of players like Ramsey, who say, I don't care what's behind me, I'm pushing you back. You're going to run after me now. And they twisted, right? They couldn't deal with it. They twisted and started tracking us all over the pitch, and hence why we had a much more comfortable day.
Yeah, and look, I think, I don't know that I totally buy that we were playing poorly before the subs so much as one of the things that really struck me during that period where we were sort of under the pressure that we were, they were pushing forward and leaving a lot of gaps in behind, and we were just really sloppy with our passes to start the counter and spring the counter.
Yeah,
it was a weirdly off day for Ozil. I'm not picking on him. He was 78% passing for a guy who's usually in the 90s. He just didn't have his rangefinder on for springing the counters. You know, Xhaka, who again I thought was really brilliant in periods of the match, but was off his game in other periods of the match, passed at about 80%. And I thought you saw that when they were pressing after we got to 2-0, we had lots of gaps where we could spring the trap, and we just weren't able to set it free. So, you know, it wasn't the worst plan. We just didn't execute it very well. The changes were definitely necessary. This was a case where I thought he got the changes spot on. Tim, I want to talk about two players who, you know, I unfortunately didn't focus on one of them enough in the last podcast, but two players who I don't think can go under the radar in this game, and that's the wingbacks, Kolasinac and Maitland-Niles, who I thought both had brilliant games. In Kola's case, you know, it seems so obvious to say it that it's not really insightful analysis, which is why I'm going to say it, because that's sort of my brand. he's just much, much better as a wingback. And as a wingback, I think you go from having a liability fullback to having an elite-level wingback. And if you upgrade that Nacho Monreal role at left center back, you've really got something there. Not that Nacho was terrible, but, you know, I think we all know he's sort of, at, you know, in the autumn of his career. Maitland-Niles, on the other hand, looks totally rejuvenated. A player who I think we all had questions about earlier in the season has come back from injury and put in some virtuoso performances. So how influential do you think these players were? I mean, Maitland-Niles obviously scores a goal. Kolasinac was putting in brilliant cross after cross and just doing what he does, which is barreling up the pitch, you know, like a freight train. I think that they were the key to the back three being effective, especially early in the match when we blitz them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because what did Rennes do in the first leg? They just went down the sides every time, and they kept isolating the fullbacks, and they got a lot of joy out of doing that. So defensively, it made a lot of sense to kind of double up there, because that's where all their danger is. So, you know,
Can I just say one thing, though, Tim?
Yeah, go for it.
They only did that, mate, with 10 men. Yep. That's the only time they woke up. So it's almost like a bit of a false game. But the lasting memory of that game was us getting rinsed in that fullback areas, right? So I agree with you there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the mistake we made as well was keep it. I understood it at the time, but as the game went on, it should have changed, was kind of putting Mkhitaryan at right back. And not just because he's not a right back, but we lost a winger. Yeah. And then you can't push them back. And so what we were able to do with a back three slash back five was, A, we were able to like double bank there a little bit, and Mustafi and Monreal stayed very close to the wing backs, but also it gives you something going forward. So either their wingers have got to chase back, and if they don't, then you're in space and you've got two guys who are powerful and who can run and can get up and down and can really exploit that space. I mean, I thought subsequently, like with Maitland-Niles' goal, for example, as soon as it was scored, I turned to my mate and I was like, neither Mustafi nor Lichtstein are scoring that. You know, Lichtstein has probably got his hands on his knees on the halfway line when that cross comes in. And I don't know, Mustafi might be doing cartwheels or something. I was like, Maitland-Niles scores that because, you know, he's kind of more the profile of player that can do that. But I thought it was interesting in that it made a lot of sense defensively and from an attacking standpoint. And what I liked about Kolasinac's performance as well was that this time he didn't have those inside forwards, so it wasn't him and Iwobi. You know, and the, mm-hmm. that whole kind of thing that became a bit of a meme, that Iwobi gets the ball and then he finds Kolasinac and then you get the cut back.
Yep.
He's varied it up, and now Kolasinac, as you said, is putting in crosses, not just cutbacks, and they're really good ones as well. He's kind of whipping them across the face of the goal. So Arsenal have varied something up there in the delivery, whether it's just because, whether that's come about naturally or whether they just thought, this is getting a bit predictable and this is a bit too precise. But, you know, when you've got two strikers like Lacazette and Aubameyang, it's worth whipping those kind of low crosses. And it was really impressive that both Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac, you know, as the whole, like, point of the wing back role is, carried both an attacking and a defensive responsibility. Like I said, I thought after the second, between the second and third goals, I really wanted Mkhitaryan to come on because I wanted us to maybe protect them a little bit, because what I felt was that Rennes were getting the ball not behind the full backs, but they were getting a lot of space. They were getting like a big run up at them, and both Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac dealt with that really well, and when they couldn't deal with it, Monreal and Mustafi more often than not could. But maybe it was just like the tension of the occasion, because it was super tense, wasn't it, when you get your two mm-hmm. goals in the first 25 minutes and all of a sudden you go from this hugely, right, let's get up and get after the mindset to, oh fuck it, like now
what? That's what I was saying. It reminded me of the first leg, Tim, is because I think when you have such a major emotional shift in a game from we're all over them, we're just going to get at them and score tons of goals, to we have to rethink our strategy now. And it happened so quickly, like it did in this leg. I do think that can paralyze you.
And it was difficult for the crowd mm-hmm. as well, because we went from being, you know, really like the atmosphere was great. It's one of the best atmospheres I can remember in years, actually. Like, I really think it brings the best out of probably any crowd. But when you've got that kind of, right, we need to win 2-0 and we're not like playing Man City or Barcelona here, like mm-hmm. we can win 2-0, and that bit of adversity, and then you've got like the ref, who, bless him,
he was overwhelmed, he was in over his head. And to be fair, though, you know, you love to defend referees, I'll give you that, and I'll defend him in this respect. Ren were working the refs. That was clearly part of their play. And I think you saw it in the Arsenal response. There was a period in the first half where we were putting in niggly challenges. I mean, Iwobi kicked out late. Lacazette went through someone. Ramsey put his... Yeah, I agree, but I think that was definitely in response to the frustration about the extent to which Ren... And they were doing it in the first leg too, by the way. Were throwing themselves to the ground and working the refs.
I think it helped us because it got the crowd up a little bit. So mm-hmm. after 2-0, when you get that little bit of a lull, nothing unites a crowd like hating on the referee. And so there was all that. And you had Rennes being like, I think if Rennes had just concentrated on playing rather than trying to get someone sent off, they might have had a bit more joy. But it kind of kept that intensity in the game, which is why, you know, a good friend of mine always has this thing about goalkeepers time wasting at the Emirates. And he's like, I'll never understand why goalkeepers do it like after 50 minutes, because, you know, the Emirates crowd is generally quite docile, but they get really pissed off by it.
It brings them back in.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, it completely raises the temperature of the game because everyone gets annoyed, and it transmits to the players. And he's like, you know, I understand why they do it in the last 5 minutes, but when they start doing it like 40 minutes to go, and I felt that was the same with Renz's play acting. I just kind of thought, you've got some players who can play. And I've got a colleague at work, actually, and his dad's French and from Brittany, and his whole family, and like his dad's side of the family, are all Rennes fans. And he was saying to me, like, Rennes aren't a good team, but they've got good players. And he was saying when they feel like they're in the shop window, when they're playing PSG or Marseille or what you saw in the first leg, there are a few of those guys fancy a move, and they'll go for it in those games. The relegation fodder, they're not bothered, but there are a few players there looking for a move, and I felt like Rennes should have lent into that strength, really. But yeah, to go back to your question, you know,
at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
Okay, you say so.
I thought the wing backs were excellent because they effectively played a really effective, really solid dual role, and actually I think we left them a little bit isolated at times, and I thought they both dealt with it terrifically.
Yeah, and you know what? I think you have to give credit, even though it wasn't their best performance. I think both Mustafi and Nacho, and yep. Mustafi made two mistakes in the game. And as usual with Mustafi, both of them could have been pretty bad and cost us pretty badly. But I think in general, they covered their wingbacks pretty well. Mustafi had one challenge. I can't remember when it was, but it was a really important, good intervention to break up a counterattack. And I think they deserve credit for giving those wingbacks the platform to do what they did. Clive, it sounded like you want to jump in, but I do want to shift to the striker. Yeah. So final word on that?
I think it's interesting perspectives on football, right? So me and Tim both agreed we wanted Mkhitaryan on that pitch badly, right? So and the fear, I was at the game as well, so the fear of the fan was it almost dictates what you see. But what Tim's view was, I want Mkhitaryan on to protect, and I'm thinking I want Mkhitaryan on to carry, to take them
back.
Yeah, because I didn't sense it as keenly as you did, Tim, that they were exposed. I felt they were doing quite well. Maybe they were exposed, but I thought they were doing quite well. And I think it's interesting, as soon as the carriers came on, I felt we travelled through the midfield really well, and the problem was solved. But maybe with the fan, it's 2-0, we're thinking, bloody hell, if they score again, let's make sure we keep them out. And I'm thinking, let's get Ramsey off for Torreira. I'll say it. I think let's get him on. Let's get Ozil off. And let's get one carrier on and one person on to protect our defence. It's amazing what you think when the moment's on the cusp. Do you know what I mean?
The interesting thing is the conversation I had at the time with a guy I sit with, I was like, I don't want Torreira to come on because I think that sends the wrong message. You do get back, you get into a sitting. I said I wanted Mkhitaryan, bit of security, but yeah, exactly what we're talking about on the counter. Yeah. I was like, it gives us a bit of shape because I felt like the strikers were, their lungs were full because they were trying to play as wingers and strikers at the same time. And I thought Mkhitaryan will hold that structure a bit, but it's not a defensive change that tells everyone they've got to sit back.
I thought that was key too, by the way, because I was a little worried that he might take off Aubameyang, who continued to have that threat running in behind, and you know should have had two late goals as a result of it. I think he got it spot on with what he did.
Yeah, to be honest, let me change my mind. I actually wanted Ramsey to stay on, but I wanted Torreira and Mkhitaryan to come on, but Lacazette to come off because Lacazette nearly got sent off. Right, and that was a key.
He had a rough outing. I don't think this was a good game for him. And you know what, Clive? Because this is what I wanted to lead into, so I'll just say it real quick to interrupt you, and then let you go again. But I think that you know, I think when we had these two strikers in our mind, we were like, oh, now we have two strikers who are going to score two goals every game, which is obviously not realistic. But what I'm realizing more and more is by having these two great strikers, if one is in a rut or one is off, the other can still win you the game. And we've seen it periods this season when Lacazette was red hot, you know, early in the season, Project 24, and Aubameyang was sort of out on the wing and not as contributing as much. We rode Lacazette's finishing. And now Lacazette's maybe in a little bit of a rut. I thought this was a poor game for him. And he got picked up by Aubameyang. And that's why you want two great strikers, right?
Yeah, there's no issue with. I keep saying it. There's no issue with those two, and I don't. It doesn't even bother me if one of them plays bad. If two of them sort of have an indifferent day, like at Spurs, then we all like go, oh, hold on a minute here. They hold our dreams in their hands, right? So we then get a little bit concerned. But it's not very often that both of them are off, right? You always get one of them do something, and that is the nature of a partnership. You find someone does the dirty work one day for someone else to score. And that's what's so good about them. They almost don't care about their own personal goals. They care about the team's goals. And they've demonstrated that. They've demonstrated that by example, by how they assist each other and how they allow each other to score each other's penalties, for example. Right? So that those two are not a problem. I felt in this game, Lacazette's got an unbelievable. They're both doing it now. Let's be fair. They're both working back really well into midfield and robbing people. Normally, robbing the central defensive midfielder, and they're doing it a lot. And they're not just they're smashing them. They really are going for them. They're really physical. They're really setting an edge. You know, when I go to the games, I always come away with a feeling. And what really stood out for me from the last time I went, which was the Man United Cup game. There's a physicality and edge to this team that's really coming out of the screen, and everybody is on it. Everybody's playing a part in it. I mean, we criticise Ozil a bit there, but let me tell you, he was trying. He was running and working. And what's interesting, what I don't notice when I'm watching on TV, is that when there was a break in play, you can see the organisers talking and pointing and saying, next one, next one. We go here, let's shape here. And this is everybody. So before, I've always felt Arsenal were quite individual. And the individual players, I've often criticised because I'm a bit of a team guy. But I'm telling you, there was not one individual out on that pitch last night. Not one. Every one of them was bought into what they were trying to achieve. And I can tell you, Elliot, I could see it. I can see it from every one of them. When I see that, I don't criticise any one of them. Even Mustafi did a smashing tackle, head-on, on the ground, slide tackle. And he needed to do it because there were people breaking on his outside. And he took them. He was winning the ball early. He was engaging high. Yes, when he started to go square, we all got scared, right? And he got robbed a couple of times. But when it was all in front of him, he was in charge, mate. And he played really well. His distribution was decent. Monreal did the same. He was stepping in. And it was all to support the front two. And there was a period when you thought, okay, we need to do something else. And the front two had done their bit. They'd worked really, really hard. And we just need to present them with a different problem. Mate, those two players, I really like them. I wonder what the future is for those two players. I really do. The balance we have is good. I sense there's another version of Arsenal out there. And I ask myself the question, are these both of these going to go on that journey? I'm not sure, because I'm not sure what Emery wants to look like next year from a team perspective. But right now, to watch them two and watch their supporting cast behind them completely in playing with a common goal, mate, it's what a fan's all about. It really is. And last night, one of my favourite nights, and we're talking Europa League, last 16 against Rennes. But for me, it's the performance and how we went about it that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And I mean, look, there were periods where it felt a little bit nerve-wracking. But to be clear, we won this 3.32 to 0.66 on the beloved XG. And you could say, well, a lot of that XG came from the two Aubameyang misses. That's true. Before those misses, we were at 1.6-ish. I mean, really almost two full goals of missed XG there in those chances. But the reason I bring it up is we felt under pressure, Tim. But do you think it is fair to say that Ren really created very little from the pressure? I mean, there were offside calls where it was nerve-wracking, but they were offside, yeah, yeah. So we played the trap pretty well. And other than that, I mean, yeah, we looked a little nervy, and yeah, we were giving them the ability to come on to us a little bit, but I can't remember too many situations where, you know, Czech was under pressure. Now, there was the awesome Kolasinac last-ditch sort of diving block that he did, you know, the sliding block where he got his second leg up and blocked across that could have been dangerous. But overall, for the pressure Ren put us under, they actually created fairly little, I thought.
Yeah. No, totally. They hit the post, didn't they, at one point?
Offside, though, right?
Oh, yeah, the flag went up, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, very little, actually. And I didn't say it in the stadium, but, I was thinking, like, the last 5 minutes when it felt like we were under a lot of pressure, I was like, I can't really remember a shot they've had.
They had 11 shots and two on target, and none of them, I don't think any of them were classed as big chances.
No, I don't remember. Like I said, I thought we conceded a lot of ground up until the edge of the area. And at that point, we had basically a back five sat there, and there were no gaps to get round like they got through the other week. They couldn't get to the touchline because we effectively doubled up on fullbacks. And then the few times they were able to get crosses in, usually Koscielny was there to kind of mop it up. So, I didn't really feel... I mean, I felt tense.
It was tense, don't get me wrong. Situation. Yeah, of course it was, yeah.
But yeah, and actually we've become, I think, quite good at this recently, at kind of closing games out. You know, you think of the Chelsea game when we were 2-0 for quite a long time and we sat in and we didn't really look in trouble. Spurs had a lot of the ball, didn't do an awful lot with it. We sat in and we defended responsibly. United was maybe... Well, United was different. But when we went 2-0 up against United, I think I'm right in saying United didn't have a shot after 2-0. So
they had one shot in the last 35 minutes, something like that. They had the Rashford header from point blank in the 92nd minute. That was it.
Yeah, exactly. So what it tells you, that, and again... Who's to say whether this will last forever or not? But the last few games, we've just become a bit more mature and a bit more able to kind of sit in and soak up a bit of pressure, which, you know, we've not been able to do for many years now. And those teams, like, was it? I think Spurs didn't have a shot other than the penalty in the last 25 minutes of the game.
Yeah,
we've. There's a bit of a theme emerging, and again, hopefully it's deliberate and hopefully it continues and it's not just a bit of an anomaly, but we've been better at closing games out recently.
Kind of hurts my narrative that had been it's because Mustafi wasn't playing and he played in this game, but there you go. I'll stay with you just for a second because I think, you know, and just a real quick mention, I have nothing bad to say about Petr Cech so much, but I still feel you can see the difference when the ball is at his feet. You know, the way we want to play out from the back, we just don't look as confident doing it with him back there. And I'm not trying to kill the guy. I mean, he did just fine, and that's not part of his game, and he's a senior player, he's 36 years old. You're not going to teach that dog a new trick, but you do see the difference, in my opinion, from what you get with Leno with the ball at his feet. But we got to talk Aubameyang. We're 34 minutes into this, and I think he's starred. And it's typical Aubameyang because, Tim, you know, here's the irony, right? Let's say you had a player who got 10 big chances every game, right? And missed 7 of them. Missing 7 big chances a game would drive fans crazy, but guess what? You'd have a 3-goal-a-game striker, right? You'd have a guy score 90 goals a season, or, you know, 100-plus goals a season. The reason I bring it up is just that I think Aubameyang drives us nuts because we always remember the big misses. Oh, we could have had 3, he could have had 4, we could have won 5-0 instead of 3-0. Yeah, well, we won 3-0, it was fine. But my point is, this is a guy who finishes at about an average rate. He's going to miss some, he shouldn't, he's going to make some. His elite skill is being constantly in position to score goals.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it. Do you think that makes it hard for fans to sometimes evaluate? Because you don't notice him getting into the position. What you notice is, there's Aubameyang with the ball at his feet 3 yards out and he missed, or he scored. Do we need to subtly, you know, and I get we're sort of getting into Ozil territory here is, if you don't see what Ozil's doing, you don't understand football. You have to, you know, view it from a 4-degree angle from 1,000 feet over the stadium. Then you could say, like, am I overdoing it on Aubameyang, or is it fair to say that his elite movement and ability to constantly get into those scoring positions is something that we maybe don't fully appreciate when we're seeing him score 2 goals and miss 2 chances?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we see him score the tap in, and like you say, no one appreciates the run that gets there. You know, it's a bit like Raheem Sterling this season. Like, he must have scored, I don't know, between 15 and 20 goals, probably from a combined distance of about 30 yards. But it's not a mistake that he's always there on the goal line. And it's the same with Aubameyang. And you know, this doesn't happen with most other strikers, even the really good ones. You know, there are some with different styles, like Kane doesn't score loads and loads of tap-ins because he actually views himself as a bit more of a 9.5. He likes to drop deep and connect the play, and he tends to take shots from longer out. But I just think about Aubameyang is it's not a perfect comparison, but I think Aubameyang and Aguero are just so similar in that respect.
If you agree. Yep.
Yeah, if you watch Man City, Aguero misses a lot of sitters, and that's not because he's a bad finisher. And it's not because Aubameyang's a bad finisher. To a degree, it's just if you keep getting in those positions, you're going to have quite a lot of bad misses. But I agree that Aubameyang is perhaps not a brilliant finisher, but his skill is being in the position for a fairly easy finish every single time. And I guess the other reason it's difficult to appreciate him is because he doesn't do a lot else that we can look at. And, you know, he's not involved that much, and I think that the best way I saw it summarized was actually by Lewis Ambrose, who just kind of said, people always say, oh, if Aubameyang doesn't score, he doesn't do anything, but he always scores, which renders the argument kind of null and void. And I think that's where we are. Like, you know, he doesn't necessarily play well, and you're right, Elliot, there are a few things that make you tear your hair out, and sometimes chronology matters. Mm-hmm. You know, if he misses those two chances but then scores at the end, then the chronology is different and your memory is different. But when he scores two and then he's got two gilt-edged chances for hat-tricks that he misses, that's what sticks in your head. So there's a few things going on there, but ultimately we're nowhere near challenging for the title, but we've got a guy who he's going to score 30 goals this season. Yeah. He's on 22. He's probably going to break that 30 barrier. That's quite unique in the last decade or so. Teams in our position don't usually have 30 goal a season scorers. Probably Van Persie for us might have been the last one.
Shall I tell you what his trick is in that box, what he does, right? So there's a trick you always tell a striker: make sure the person passing to you can see your boots. And by that, it means, can you get them to a line where they can see you to fire it into your feet? And he does that as well as anybody, and that's why it looks so easy. But if you look at it, you think, pass it, because he's there. How does he get there? And Gary Lineker had the same skill. He'd win the sprints in the box, and he makes the side foot look so simple. But what he's really doing is making sure the person crossing can see his boots. And then it's a simple cross. And the third goal is exactly that. If he's 1 yard further in, he's marking himself. And we're smashing the ball across the box and no one's there. And we're saying, oh, Klasnik's final ball's not very good. Or why haven't we got anybody in the box? But his trick is, I make sure that the sister can see my boots. And that's a simple skill, but it takes a lot of physical effort and separation skill to make that happen. And what's he got? He's got two first 2 yards of like lightning. Mm-hmm. He's unbelievable. You can't track him. I don't care who you are. You can't track him. He's 15 to 20 yards pace. It's probably not the same as it was 3 years ago. But he doesn't need that in playing for Arsenal, because we pass a lot into the box, don't we? We really do. We've got some of the best passes into the box in the league, and now we've got a player that wants passes into the box, right? And so that's his trick, really. I just wanted to explain it to you.
Yeah,
that passing
lane brilliant.
Is the key.
It's
key.
Brilliant. And you know, watch him for the second goal. Actually for both goals, really, but the second goal, the way he varies his speeds to like make sure he stays in line, and some people thought that was offside. I certainly don't think that was offside, but that Kolasinac cross is inch perfect because Aubameyang arrives into that position so flawlessly, right? I mean, some strikers are offside there, or some strikers trying to stay behind the line don't get to it. He just has that perfect feel for how to time his run. Also, I mean, I think he deserves credit for the assist to Maitland-Niles. Look, I don't think for a second that he spots Maitland-Niles and he's crossing him. I don't believe that. I think he's just trying to dig out a cross. But, you know, to be intelligent and alert enough to know that he was not offside, you know, that Kola was offside but wasn't playing the ball, to stay alive to it, to sprint to get to it, to do the work to get to that ball and dig out a cross, I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. And the misses are bad. There's no denying the misses are bad. But, you know, I think, again, if you're going to get four big chances in a game and convert two of them, I will fucking take that all day long. Tim, just super, super quick. You know, I liked the Black Panther thing in the moment. Now that I've seen the kinds of people it's upset, I like it even more. Are you enjoying it more the day after, now that you can see who is most upset by it?
I have to say, I haven't actually seen anyone upset by
it. Seems
which
a lot of United
me...
fans and Spurs fans for some reason
oh,
are
right,
rustled.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, no, I saw some Spurs account talking about it.
Kane would never do that. You know, he would just do things that are not cringy at all, like promising his daughter's life on the fact that he scored a goal so it could be credited to him.
Yeah. And you know, maybe I'm taking a bit of a leap here because I don't think this is why he did it. But, you know, maybe a guy who had a banana thrown at him by a Tottenham fan, might like to celebrate with an image that's like
culturally representative.
Quite,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Quite powerful. Yeah. In that respect. But look, I don't, maybe he did, but I don't think he did it for that reason. It's just a bit of fun, isn't it? It's just like, I thought it was great. I know he intimated in an interview recently that he might do this. If you watch when he scores the penalty against United, he goes looking for that mask and he can't find it.
He was looking for it.
Well, there are rumors that he was going to pull it out for the penalty at Spurs.
And, yeah, I'm less convinced by that because I don't think you can get away with that, like not in your home stadium.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you watch that celebration again when he scores the penalty against United, he goes rummaging behind that scoreboard. I thought it was great. And look, how viral has that image gone? And you know, for people who do, I kind of get it with other fans of other clubs, because you know they just want to complain because it's Arsenal. But the other thing is like. And I think this is a lesson that we all need to learn from, and some of us more than others. Not every single thing that happens is aimed at you. And so for me, don't get me wrong, I still enjoyed it. But as a 35-year-old middle class white man, you know, it doesn't have to be aimed at me personally. And that's fine. You know, it doesn't,
hashtag
you know,
against modern football.
You don't have to get angry because things aren't for you. You know, you can just kind of go, well, yeah, I'm, you know, 30, 40, 50-year-old geezer. I've never seen Black Panther. I'm not interested in it. That's fine. It doesn't have to be for you.
To be fair,
just ignore it. Get on with your life.
It's just like all your posts about women's football, which I'm sure met with tremendous yes. amounts of rational, respectful responses from people who are saying, you know what, it may not be for me, but I'm glad this exists. I'm sure that's all you get from that, too.
Indeed. To be fair, we do get quite a lot of that.
Oh, so, no, of course. Look, it is often the loudest, most repugnant voices that are heard and shared the most, which is sort of the unfortunate thing about social media is that it rewards bad behavior, you know, because it's clickbait, right? It's just a social form of clickbait.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it was a hell of a lot of fun. Look, there was something about strikers in these foreign countries putting on, you know, luchador masks or, you know, character masks after scoring goals that seemed so distant and not associated with us, and have the guy doing it at our club now. I think it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you know,
did you watch the draw today?
I didn't watch it, but I am aware of it.
Right, yeah. No, it's just several people pointing out the irony of the fact that Aubameyang was booked for that, but that image was all fucking over their montage.
It's
before the draw, you know.
Yeah, it's not an acceptable behavior, but we are going to use it for marketing purposes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's great marketing for, let's be honest, a competition that suffers in terms of marketing.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean, look, it is what it is. It's a hell of a lot of fun. I'm happy for him. I think it would have been problematic had he had those two misses and then somehow Ren found a late goal, but it didn't happen. Clive, final thought on this match, just real quick before we talk briefly about Napoli and then do our predictatron for top four. It's still coming. So for you, Iwobi and Mkhitaryan, I thought, were excellent. And I still can't help but kind of sort of believe we still look better with one up top and those two guys on the pitch, or two guys on the pitch who, you know, aren't Lacazette. And it's not Lacazette. It could be Lacazette instead of Aubameyang. I think Iwobi, I have to admit, I've been critical of him at times this season for lack of end product. But he really seems to be coming into his own. He's so strong on the ball. There's a confidence about him that's coming back. I think the return of Mkhitaryan since he's come back from injury, and Iwobi, his performances since maybe just being taken out of the firing line a little bit. I've been super impressed by both these players. Who would want to be a manager? I mean, for you, how do you keep those guys out of a starting lineup when they look so influential when they come on like this?
Well, if you looked at the flashes of TV last night, and when I got back, I watched the game, and basically, if you look at Torreira and Guendouzi and when Iwobi is on the bench versus Manchester United, they don't look unhappy, do they? They don't look unhappy when they, you know, when they come off and come back on, and they celebrate at the end. Everyone looks like they're okay. I think we've made the mistake many times in the past of overplaying players, and Ramsey's a great example of that. How fresh does he look? You know, he looks really fresh, and when he's fresh and not injured, guess what? He's not a bad player, is he? You know, he's motoring around that pitch. He's been taken out, not started, and people have been complaining. Who's to say that the manager has not targeted this week? You got Manchester United, Spurs, and a last 16 Europa League game, and all of a sudden, the players we want fresh are fresh and available to play. You know, and it's and play to levels that we need. That in all three of those games, we were in charge. And we could have had, you know, but for a penalty miss, we could have sorted Spurs out as well. So I think I'm a big fan of this formation. I use it myself when I coach. I'm a big fan of changing the interior players around for the game state. So whether you have one in front, the back four, or back three, sorry, or two in front, whether you have two forwards, one behind, or two behind, one up top, it doesn't matter. It's all about the game state. What are you trying to prepare for? But on the outside, you have your armchair, and that creates the stability in your system. And on the interior, you have your game state, and that means I can change that around. So I can have two defensive. If I out a result, I can have two fours if I'm 2-0 behind the last 16 Europa League game, or if I need to change how we transfer up the pitch, I can have a couple of ball carriers in there as well to travel. And this is why I like it, and I never complain about the formation. You complain about how it's played, and not even as much to personnel. So if you pick the wrong personnel maybe for a certain day, as Tim alluded to around Huddersfield, then you say, oh, maybe it looks a little bit negative. But then you ask yourself on that day, what was the positioning of our wing-backs and who was actually playing there? Did they really progress? Were they really aggressive? Did they feel tentative? It's all about it's a formation that's positionally based. So if you get your position right and your starting position right and play with the right aggressiveness, then you're going to see what we saw last night. So sometimes, Elliot, I want the two to play. Sometimes when you see Mkhitaryan and Iwobi come on, you want them to play as well. I mean, Iwobi literally took the mickey out of them. He's got such body confidence. He was pinning people.
I wish I had some of that, frankly, yeah. If we're being honest. I could use some body confidence. Yeah.
I know where Tim sits to the ground, so he's right in front of us, and I was on that same side. And he was taking the ball off throw-ins and going, bosh, get off me. I'm just going to roll it inside. And basically, it was like trying to move a wardrobe. You couldn't move it. Right? And then he would turn around, he would slow down, he'd play inside. He looked so confident. Not that player dancing around the ball, just sticking it into an area to get an ooh from the crowd. None of that anymore. He's holding people off. He's playing it to feet. He's running at people. He's slowing down, change of pace. It's incredible, the maturity. And this is what happens with young players. They can just mature right in front of you. And you think, crikey, they've made it. Then you go over the top. Then they have a bad game. But he's getting closer to being consistent. And you called it at the start of the year. You did call him out, didn't you, as your player of the season?
I did. I lost a little faith at one point, if I'm being fair.
Yeah, that's okay, man. Don't worry. We always get that little bit wrong. But let me tell you, you called it. And I thought at the time, I thought that was brave. But you look back now, and I thought it's a smart bit of projection. And I'm starting to wonder, not only is he, you know, the question was maybe at the start of the year, is he good enough for Arsenal? Now I'm starting to wonder, how good could he be for Arsenal? And I really saw that last night. That's what I walked away with.
Yeah, I was super impressed. And look, I think what we can do now is just shift to Napoli and the predicted trauma. We can take a little break to do that. So what I'm going to tell you, a couple things. We are hoping to repeat our title, to defend our title in the FBAs, the Football Blogging Awards, as best podcast as voted by the fans. That is you. You might be like, well, I'm not a fan. I don't even like this podcast. In which case, I would suggest rethinking your strategy because you're listening to it right now. So for those of you who are listening and actually enjoy it, which hopefully is a large cohort of the people listening, you can go to arsenalvisionpodcast.com/FBAS, FBAs. And there's a little widget that says vote. You tap it and you voted. You don't even have to put in an email or anything like that. There's also an option to tweet out your vote, which gives us a little hashtag social proof, but we're certainly not in it for that. We're just in it for the awards. So yeah, another quick announcement.
I might actually turn up this time.
You mean you might show up to claim the award as opposed to it having to be claimed by some stranger who I've never seen before, who's photographed holding our award?
That would be nice, seeing as how
it's in London and you live in London. last announcement is, hey, guess what? The Enclosed, our lingerie friends, our friends with all the sexy, silky stuff. You don't want to miss them, and they don't want to miss us. They have signed on for the balance of 2019. That's right. We are in women's underwear for the rest of the year, and we are thrilled about it. I know Paul is particularly thrilled about that. So you definitely want to visit them, and you're going to be hearing from them in the break, which is coming up now. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk about sexy panties and stuff, and then when we come back, we'll quickly talk about Napoli, a little less sexy, and then the Predictatron. Very sexy. Stay with us. Okay, everyone, it's time to tell you about our friends at Enclosed Lingerie. You can find them online at theenclosed.com. Enclosed Lingerie is a lingerie of the month club. That's right, just like a beer of the month club, only better, because it's a high-end luxury lingerie gift for you and your partner that's going to enhance the intimacy in your relationship. Right now, if you put in Arsenal at checkout, they're going to give you $35 off any gift from Enclosed Lingerie. So you're going to want to go to theenclosed.com and sign up now. What better way to celebrate the romance in your relationship than celebrating with a gift from The Enclosed? And the gifts keep coming every month. So while it can be difficult to remember to keep the romance, to keep the intimacy in your relationship, The Enclosed has your back. Every month you're going to get that high-end luxury lingerie gift, and it's going to remind you of the importance of romance in your relationship. So do it now. Go to theenclosed.com. There is a perfect fit guarantee, so you never have to worry about the fit. It's beautiful, high-end luxury lingerie. Just go to theenclosed.com and enter promo code ARSENAL for $35 off at checkout. Do it now. Okay, we're back, and we're going to whip through this. We're gonna wrap this pod up a lot quicker than you think. We're 53 minutes in. Trust me, it's not going much longer. We're just going to talk really, really fast. So if you're on 2x speed, it'll be done in like 30 seconds. Tim, Napoli. It is not the best draw, although I will say I don't think Valencia or Villarreal are that much to fear. I don't think Napoli are that much to fear when you consider what we went through last season. Atleti, you know, they are a legit Champions League team. They are, and I realize they just got dumped out by Juve, but that was a challenge that was probably the sternest challenge you could face or hope to face in a Europa League. I think that Atleti team is certainly better than the Chelsea team we could be on track to face in the final. So while this is the harder of the two sides of the draw, I'm happy that we're kept apart from Chelsea all the way to the final if we get there. Let's just focus on Napoli for the moment. Your reaction to that draw, and maybe you can just remind people of an article you wrote about what it's like to go to Napoli. Beautiful part of Italy, but maybe not the best away trip for a football fan.
Yeah, so I kind of had mixed feelings about the draw at the time because I looked at some of the destinations and I was thinking, well, they all look good. and so in my mind, I thought, I'll go unless it's Napoli. And so the reason I won't go, I mean, it's quite expensive. It's going into Easter weekend. I've been there before. I stayed in Sorrento a little bit last time, which if you're planning on going, I'd really recommend because Sorrento is beautiful and it's not very far away. You'll have to stay in Naples. You won't be able to travel from the stadium to Sorrento, but I've been to a lot of places to watch football inside of Europe and, you know, in South America. And so I've been to Istanbul, I've been to Rome. I think quite strongly Napoli shouldn't be allowed to play at home in European competition for the simple reason that they absolutely cannot guarantee the safety of supporters, and the reason they can't is because they still do this thing where they bus you in 15 minutes after kickoff, and that's so that there are no Napoli fans around. And if that's how far you have to go to assure the safety of the away fans, then the home team shouldn't be allowed to use their stadium. And frankly, the police there are dangerous. They put you in harm's way. I think they do it deliberately. They're very, very uncommunicative, surly. And I think they deliberately kind of put you in harm's way. They dumped us somewhere at like 1 o'clock in the morning after the game. I was on my own. I had to Naples at 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's a weird city, Naples. It's one of the best and worst places I've ever been all at the same time. It's an acquired taste. It's quite raw and rough and ready, and there are things about, there are some things that I really liked about that and things I really didn't like about that. So aside from that, anyway, I'm actually quite happy with the draw, because I think we're going to have to beat Chelsea and Napoli to win this thing, at least one of them. And if we're not going to do it, let's go out in the quarterfinal. But also on top of that, last night felt like the first proper European night at the Emirates for me, for quite a long time. And I count even some of the Bayern and Barca games, which to me were more about celebrity than an actual football match. It was, oh, Messi's here and stuff like that, rather than here's a football match we can win. It reminded me of the old Cup Winners' Cup. And this is kind of what I hoped would happen when we dropped into the Europa League. I thought, well, at least we can compete and try and win it. And actually last season shattered some illusions, because I thought it was fucking terrible until we played Atleti. I thought all the games were awful and I didn't really enjoy it that much. We've actually, through a little bit of incompetence, made the last two rounds quite interesting. But last night, it really felt like there was something in the air from the off. And something happened that I haven't heard for ages. People were singing on the way to the tube station after the game. You know, that energy and that excitement was all there. And I think drawing a team like Napoli just keeps that alive. It's going to be a really good game, and I'm really looking forward to it. If perhaps we were languished in six, seven points away from the top four, I wouldn't like it. But the fact that we're still in that top four race, and I'm not taking that for granted, that's still going to be difficult. I feel like, yeah, let's have another kind of two games that try and keep some of this momentum going. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I would say we shouldn't fear these kinds of games, but that's rich coming from a club that found a way to lose at Bate and lose at Rennes. You know, we shouldn't get so hubristic based on our recent results and performances that we think we are now entitled to beat a team like Napoli. And I think they might be the toughest opponent, non-Chelsea opponent left in the competition, but we still should have enough for them. And the way we are playing, I think, encourages that. And I also think the fact that we now have off until April 1st, as long as we don't lose hashtag momentum, is a huge advantage for us. We should be fit, healthy, and rested by the time, you know, this competition comes back. Clive, just super, super quick, so we can do this predictatron and get out of here. Your thoughts on drawing Napoli?
Yeah, I thought it's a tough draw, right? And it's a tough draw because they are a proper European club, and they have got good players, particularly at the top end of the pitch, and players that we know. You know, a lot of these teams that we played in the Europa League, we don't know hardly any of their players. And so we know players like Milik, we know players like Calderon. I can't say that right.
Calderon.
We know Dries Mertens. We know these players. Koulibaly. We want some of these players, right? We were linked with Mertens. We loved Koulibaly. So these players are proper players, and so that's gonna bring a level of concentration. I did feel we lacked concentration against Bate away, and I did feel that the Manchester United game hovered over Rennes away and Spurs games, etc. I think they hovered over that, and some of the decisions we made away from home substitutions. I would like to try to explain them that we had upcoming games, we were going to use wing backs, etc. So maybe that's been proven, but I'm not so sure. But hey, look, this is a good draw. It's good. Definitely one of the games I'll be going to in the midweek for the home game, for definite, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yep, and I would say that, you know, to be fair, I mentioned the Rennes tie as one that, you know, we lost the first leg, but I think if we don't go down to 10 men, we win that first leg 6-0 the way we were playing. So I don't think it's totally fair to point that out as somehow being, you know, a poor performance. Okay, are you ready for the headline? Are you ready for the headline event? We are 1 hour into the pod. We're going to see how quickly we can do this. I am going to read off a fixture, and you're going to give me results. Do you want to go club by club or week by week? I think club by club because we don't know when these are going to get rearranged to. Do you guys agree with club by club?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Tim, I'm going to give you Spurs first, okay?
Okay.
And Clive, I'll give you this too. I've filled mine out, by the way, so that I don't have to read it off, but I can tell you what I've done. Okay, here we go. Palace at home, Spurs.
Draw.
Okay, Clive, Palace at home, Spurs.
Spurs win.
Okay, I have that down as a Spurs win as well. Tim, Liverpool away.
Draw.
Okay, wow, really? Okay, good for Spurs, I guess. Clive, Liverpool away.
Liverpool win.
Okay, I love it. That's a zero for them. I have that as a Liverpool win as well. Brighton at home. I have 3 points for Spurs.
Yep, same.
Okay, Clive?
I'm going to go draw.
You're going to go draw Brighton at home. Okay, good for you. Clive, we'll mix it up.
Can I depend what stadium they're playing? That might be their first game in their new stadium, right?
You know what? We're just gonna go through this because I don't want it to take all day. Okay, so we're just gonna give them the 1 point that you've given them and move on. By the way, huge props to N. Guyanduzi on the Discord who created the Google Doc I am using for this. So huge credit to N. Guyanduzi for it, and we really, really appreciate you. Okay, so you're giving them one for Brighton at home. Yeah. Okay, yeah. How about Huddersfield at home for Spurs, Tim?
Spurs win.
Okay. I have that as a Spurs win as well. How about you, Clive?
Yeah, win.
All right. Win. Man City away. Tim?
Loss.
Yep.
Spurs defeat.
Yep.
Yep. Same.
West Ham home. Tim?
Spurs win.
Yep. Clive?
Spurs lose.
West Ham at home. I love it. God bless you. All right.
Stan would rather kill their own mothers than lose that game.
I mean, who wouldn't rather kill their own mother, if we're being honest? Okay, how about Bournemouth away, Tim, for Spurs?
Draw.
Oh, draw. Okay, we all think Spurs, the wheels are coming off the bus. Clive, how about you? Bournemouth away.
Bournemouth win.
0 points for Spurs. Holy cow, it's all falling apart. It's all gone wrong for Spurs. I have it a West Ham win and a Bournemouth away draw, by the way. Everton at home. I have a win for them in the final game of the season, Tim.
Yeah, a win for Spurs.
Clive?
Yeah, a win, but no one cares.
No, not with the points you've given them. Jesus, that's a bad close to the season.
No one cares, and I'll be out drinking somewhere.
I have Paul and Scott's predictions as well. I will read those out to you in the final tallies. I just don't want to slow this down anymore. We'll do Chelsea next. Chelsea's first game, Everton away. I have 3 points for Chelsea. Clive, we'll start with you this time. Everton away for Chelsea.
Draw.
Okay. Tim?
Chelsea win.
Clive, Cardiff away for Chelsea.
Damn it. Win.
3 points for Chelsea. Tim?
Yeah, I think Chelsea win again.
Yep, and if anybody cares, not that anybody does, I have 3 points in both of those games as well. I have 3 points for Chelsea at home to West Ham. Clive, what do you have?
West Ham, Chelsea, that's a draw.
Man, West Ham might make the Champions League based on Clive's predictions. Tim, West Ham home for Chelsea. Chelsea home for West Ham.
Chelsea win.
Tim loves Chelsea. He's got him winning everything. Liverpool away, Clive. Surely they can't get points at Liverpool.
They do all right up there, so it's going to be a draw.
It's going to be a draw. Tim?
Yeah.
Liverpool win.
That's correct. That is what I have as well. So then they go to, they host Burnley. Clive, surely they can beat Burnley. At home.
Draw.
The draw, they're going to draw Burnley at home? Jesus, these teams must be terrible that we're chasing for top four. Burnley at home, Tim?
I think they'll squeak it. Yeah, win. Chelsea okay. win.
Then the big one for the top four, Clive. Man United away. Chelsea at United.
Draw.
You know you can pick other outcomes, right? Tim?
Yeah, pretty cool.
Draw.
Draw? Okay.
Yeah.
Clive, Watford at home. Chelsea home for Watford. Another way to say that.
Chelsea win, yeah.
Chelsea win.
They kill Watford.
Tim?
What's the date of this?
let's just say sometime in late April.
Chelsea win.
Okay. Chelsea have Leicester away, Clive.
Ooh.
Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
Never count him out. Draw.
No, I'm going to go Leicester win.
Leicester win. 0 points for the team called Chelsea that we all hate. Tim.
Draw.
Draw. Okay. Final game for Chelsea. Brighton at home. Clive, final day of the season.
Win. Win.
Win. Tim.
Yeah, win. Chelsea win.
Holy cow. Spurs and Chelsea running each other close. Oh, my goodness. These teams are terrible. How is it we were behind them for so much of the season? All right. Here we go. Manchester United. Let's see if we can have them fall apart too. Tim, Manchester United host Watford in their next game.
Draw.
Draw. I will post these results online, by the way. Clive?
Watford will win 5-0. No, I think I'll go draw as well.
Draw. Okay, so United cannot beat Watford at home. Check. Wolves away, Tim.
Is that a league game?
It is a league game, yeah.
Okay.
I think they also have a cup game, but it is a league game, yep.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I think United will win that.
3. Okay. Clive?
Can I change my... No, I'm going to go Wolves win.
Wolves win. Okay. United picking up points at a staggeringly poor pace again. That's fine. That's fine. We knocked the wheels off Solskjaer's bus. I can see that. Okay, so West Ham home. This is Clive's favorite for the title, Tim. West Ham... United home to West Ham.
You have to understand the psyche of a West Ham.
I understand psyche. I am a psychologist.
Hate Spurs.
I'm an amateur psychologist.
And they hate Chelsea. Trust me, they're going to have to kill them.
This is not your rebuttal time. Okay, Tim.
United will win.
United will win.
Man United will
win. Yeah, Man United will win. Okay, West Ham United will do what at Old Trafford, Clive?
Old Trafford, oh, they'll lose.
Okay, yeah. Good. Everton away. United at Everton. Tim.
United win.
United win. At Everton, Clive.
Yeah, a narrow United win, and I nearly went draw.
I don't think a lot of us think Everton are very good, but I think you may have forgotten that they have won Theo Walcott. Okay, United hosting Man City. I have it written here, Manchester Derby. What do you think?
Man City win.
Man City win. Clive?
Where is it? Sorry, mate. Home
it's,
away? Where
it's in
it?
Manchester.
United.
Old Trafford.
Old Trafford. I got a sneaky feeling by then City may come off their peak and United would love to draw.
Draw. That's close to doing them. All right. And right after that, United have to host Chelsea. And you already have results put in for that. So I can't let you change them, can I? So that's 1 point and 1 point. Okay. Huddersfield away. Tim, United at Huddersfield. The mighty Huddersfield.
Yeah, they'll win that. Man United.
I think they might. Clive, difference of opinion there? No, they're going to win
it. No, not even for content there.
Hashtag content. Last game, Cardiff at Old Trafford.
They'll win that.
Okay.
Yeah, United win.
Okay. So, we just got to get the Arsenal, 2 points to get top four. Here we go. Tim, you know what? I owe Clive a start. Clive, Newcastle at home. It says here in May of 2042, I think, is our next game. Newcastle at home.
It's April Fool's Day, I think, but I still think we'll win.
I think we might, too. How about you, Tim?
Arsenal win.
Arsenal win. The mighty Arsenal. The mighty Arsenal then travel to a team none of us rate, Everton. Clive, what are we going to do at Everton?
I think this is the most important game of the season. It will be by the time we play there. Because if we win it, I think our waveform will take us forward. So I'm going to say 2-1 win.
All right. We are winning at Everton. How about you, Tim? Are we winning at Everton?
Yes.
Yes, of course we are. This is turning into the Arsblog prediction where we just win every game. All right. Watford away, Clive. That's a tough one.
Yeah. I'm not so confident about that.
Which is the good one, Watford or Wolves? They're both 1-7, 1-8, right? They're kind of the same team.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Arsenal win for that one.
Of course you are. How about you, Tim?
Right, so I'm gonna have to go for a draw because I think it will depend on whether Watford are in the FA Cup semi-final 5 days later. Mm. If they are, we'll beat them. If they're not, I think we might lose. So I'm gonna go for a draw.
Okay, I love it. Clive, Palace at home at the Emirates, Fortress Emirates.
I'm going to say win, but Palace are much better away than they are at home.
They are.
It's going to be a tough game, right? So, okay. But I think if we what we found recently, I think we'll take them.
No problem. Yeah. You only have us winning four on the bounce there. How about you, Tim? Crystal Palace at home?
Narrow win. It's off to Napoli away as well.
I take it back, Clive. We just beat United, so you actually have us winning five on the spin so far. Leicester away. Are we going to make it six, Clive?
No, we're not.
Draw?
That's going to be potentially, I've got a feeling it's going to be a loss.
Okay, 0 points for the mighty Arsenal. That's a little scary. Leicester away. How about you, Tim?
Yeah, I've got us down for a defeat as well, actually.
Oh, boy. Okay, so that means when we host Brighton at home, we're going to be angry and ready to rumble. Brighton at home, Clive.
Yeah, they're getting it. Win.
In the neck. In the neck. Brighton at home. Tim.
Yeah, Arsenal win.
Arsenal win comfortably, I would say. Then we get a really rough run-in. Tricky rough run-in. Last two games, Burnley away, Wolves away. Clive, why don't you give them both to me at once? What do you think we're going to do, Burnley away, Wolves away?
I think we're going to win one, lose one of those games. I'm going to go Burnley we win, Wolves we lose.
Burnley we win, Wolves we lose. Clive, you'll be happy to know we didn't need any of those points according to your predictions. But Tim, we will need some of these points in your predictions. So how many are we getting? Well, Burnley away, what do you have?
So Burnley away, I think we'll win. If we've got a win, I think we'll win.
If Wolves we win away, that, we may need something from Wolves away in your prediction. Because right now you have us on... Oh, no. Okay, so right now you have us level with Spurs for fourth, so it would depend on goal difference if we lose at Wolves away. You want to give us a draw and get us into fourth?
I am going to go for a draw.
All right.
I
It's happened again. It's happened again. Tottenham Hotspur, it's happened again. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm right in saying Wolves have used the fewest number of players this season.
So you think they'll be knackered and on the beach
when
already?
That game's played, they might be bushed, but it depends on when it's played.
Easy
but yeah,
to forget.
I'll go for a draw.
Some of these April, May games against the mid-table teams, they're on the beach at that point. And so you just kind of hope that's the case. Okay, so now I'm going to read out everyone's. So I'm going to start with Paul. Paul has Arsenal in third on 80 points.
He can't defend himself. Do not
He's got Spurs in fourth on 79, United 76, Chelsea 74. Scott, the analytics guru, Arsenal third on 77, Chelsea fourth on 75, Spurs fifth on 74, United sixth on 72.
Wow.
Elliot, the host of the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast, known for his rational and level-headed analysis, has Arsenal tied with Spurs on 77 for third. So either we are third or fourth on goal difference. Chelsea fifth on 76. United sixth on 75. So 75, 76, 77, 77. So any result changes in either direction, we're dead. By the way, I had us losing at Leicester as well. Tim has Arsenal tied with Chelsea for third at 77. Spurs fifth on 76. United sixth on 75.
And what do I sign?
Yeah, fuck yeah. Clive, Arsenal third on 78. United fourth on 73. We're 5 points clear of fourth. I mean, we breezed it. And then Chelsea and Spurs fighting it out on 71 points for fifth and sixth. I want to be clear.
For relegation. That's exactly what I want.
Surveying six people, or is it five people? One, two, three, four, five. Five people on an Arsenal podcast, and all five, using their analytics brain, totally informed by their intellect, have Arsenal finishing third and Spurs finishing behind us. So congratulations to us. I think we can all agree. It's happened again. It's happened again. Tottenham Hotspur. It's happened again. St. Tottenham's Day is coming at the end of the season, and we are proud to announce it here in the middle of March. That's going to do it. We whipped it pretty quickly, I thought. Did it quickly. Housekeeping. In the Spotlight episode on Aubameyang and Lacazette coming out next week, we have a really special additional Patreon episode coming out next week as well. We're doing some new stuff on YouTube you can check out. We'd love it if you'd subscribe there. That'd be fun too. I'm going to post these predictions so you can see them. And I'm going to then go ahead and get this podcast pumped out probably 30 or 40 minutes after whenever I say it's going to happen on Twitter. In any event, we love you. We adore you. We appreciate you. We hope you will sign up on Patreon because who else loves you enough to predict Arsenal to finish third? So do that for us. But if you don't, we still love you anyway. Tim's on Twitter @Stilberto. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
Always. Clive's on Twitter, Clive PAFC. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much.
My name's Elliot Smith. Block me on Twitter. Give us a 5-star review. Write nasty things about us in the comments. And we will talk to you, months from now, after Arsenal 10, Newcastle 0.